rightly disposed for everlasting life. In earlier years, people were more religious and had more Bible knowledge than they do now. Many were willing to discuss scriptural matters, and as in the first century, those who were rightly disposed for everlasting life became believers. Acts 13:48. Durdai Hamra is an example of such. In 1924, she accepted a booklet, which she read that same evening and through the night. "I went to bed as a Pentecostal," she later said, "and I woke up as one of Jehovah's Witnesses." In the mid-1920s, one of the 8 Feldwitt brothers attended a public talk about hellfire and obtained a booklet on the topic. What he read convinced him that the hellfire doctrine is false. Soon thereafter, when the family was gathered at the family farm, he excitedly shared what he had learned with his 7 brothers and 3 sisters. They discussed the booklet till late that night. In a short time, all the siblings and many of their marriage mates became Bible students. Later, many of their children and grandchildren became zealous publishers, and some carried the truth to other areas. People's spiritual interest was evident in 1936 when M.A. Howlett from the World Headquarters in New York was the speaker at conventions in Bergen and Oslo. In Bergen, 810 attended the public talk, including some ministers of religion and a bishop. Only 125 of those assembled were witnesses. In Oslo, where 140 witnesses were gathered, 1,014 attended the public talk. They are starting to come! How excited Jehovah's Witnesses were in 1935 when the identity of the great crowd mentioned at Revelation 7, 9-17 was made clear. God's people were delighted to learn that worshipers who hoped to live on a paradise earth could join the anointed remnant as dedicated servants of Jehovah. From that year on, the focus of the preaching work was on gathering the great crowd, who would survive the Great Tribulation, the biggest ingathering of true worshipers in mankind's history. In 1935, some pioneers with the Heavenly Hope were preaching in a rural area near Lillehammer. 10-year-old Jan Johansen listened eagerly as the pioneers told his family about God's purpose for a paradise earth. By the time he was 13, Jan had such a strong desire to share his happy hope with others that he borrowed his father's bag and went out to preach in their neighborhood, all by himself. Now, more than 70 years later, Jan, along with his wife Edith, is still preaching zealously, thrilled to have had a share in the great influx of new ones over the years. One day in 1937, Olaf Rud and another brother were at Olaf's home discussing the great crowd. They were the only 2 witnesses in Haugesund, and they were wondering how this huge ingathering would take place. Suddenly, there was a knock at the door. Olaf opened the door, and there stood Alfred Trengereid. He had found and read a copy of The Watchtower and liked what he read. Without delay, he then got into his boat and rowed to Haugesund to get literature from the man he knew to be a witness, Olaf. Olaf was amazed. "Now they are starting to come," he thought. And come they did, although not all in the same way and not all at the same time. Alfred became a brother and was joined by many others from the area who responded to the good news of the kingdom. Boats helped to gather the great crowd. When the preaching work was first starting in Norway, the prospect of preaching to the isolated inhabitants of countless islands and remote coastal areas was daunting. Hence, in 1928, the branch office bought a motorboat that was large enough to accommodate 2 or 3 pioneers and robust enough to navigate Norway's jagged coastline. But who was qualified to captain such a boat? The experienced pioneer Carl Gunnberg volunteered. His background in the Navy and experience as a navigation teacher proved to be very useful. The first boat, named Elihu, put out to sea from Oslo, headed south, and stopped at ports along the coast. However, one stormy winter's night in 1929, the Elihu was wrecked not far from Stavanger. All were grateful that the brothers on board reached the shore safely. In 1931, the brothers obtained another boat, which they named Esther. Again, Carl set out, assisted by two other brothers. The Esther covered territories in western and northern Norway for the next 7 years. In 1932, Carl felt that he was getting too old to embark on more adventures. So he stepped ashore to serve as a pioneer in eastern Norway and left the boat in the hands of Johannes Karstad. In 1938, the Esther was replaced by a boat named Rut, which was used until 1940, when World War II put a stop to the maritime preaching activity. The sailing pioneers had covered vast areas and placed much literature. In 1939, the two brothers on the Rut, Andreas Hoppe and Magnus Randall, reported that in just 1 year, they had placed more than 16,000 books, booklets, and magazines, and had played 1,072 phonograph talks for 2,531 listeners. In addition to many wonderful spiritual experiences, the brothers on the boats saw some awesome sights. "Day after day we headed north," reported Andreas Hoppe, "in and out of fjords and around towering headlands. The scenery was magnificent, majestic, and wild. In winter, north of the Arctic Circle, they gasped at the breathtaking radiance of the northern lights, Aurora Borealis, and in summer they were dazzled by the brilliance of the midnight sun." The following is from page 113 of the printed edition. He kept his promise. Johannes Karstad, born 1903, baptized 1931. Profile: served on pioneer boats for 8 years. In 1929, Johannes was in the hospital recovering from tuberculosis. He started reading the Bible and promised God that he would serve him when he recovered from his illness. Shortly before he was discharged, Johannes read with great interest some of the Bible students' books. Later, he acquired more books, which he read 4 or 5 times each, and it was not long before Johannes was sharing his newfound truths with others. As soon as he recovered fully, he went to Bergen and called on Brother Ringereide, who suggested that Johannes start pioneering. Although Johannes had barely started preaching, he did not hesitate to enroll as a pioneer. From 1931 to 1938, he served on the pioneer boat Esther, and then he pioneered about 1 year on the Rut, plying the waters along the entire coast as far north as Tromsø. In 1939, Johannes became a traveling overseer in the eastern part of Norway, in addition to serving part-time at Bethel for a while. After World War II, he married Sigrid and pioneered with her. In 1995, Johannes finished his earthly course in Fredrikstad. Returning to the account, a zealous pioneer sister. During the 1930s, the number of pioneers increased rapidly. Having few conveniences, they had to make do. Yet they covered vast territories, preaching the good news and distributing Bible literature. Their unflagging zeal helped lay a solid foundation for future growth. For example, Sylvi Løves, later Sturmier, from Oslo, had been searching for the truth and had attended various religious meetings. One day she attended a meeting of Jehovah's Witnesses and realized that she had found Bible truth. She was baptized in 1933, and 2 years later she traveled to northern Norway to serve as a pioneer. Although she limped a little because of polio, in 6 years Solveig preached in most of the cities, towns, fishing villages, and small communities from south of Bodø all the way to Kirkenes. thousands of people accepted Bible literature. In just 1 year, Sylvi obtained more than 1,100 subscriptions to our magazines. One person who showed great interest in Sylvi's message was the carpenter Dag Jensen in the village of Hennes in Vesterland. For years, he had obtained our literature from other interested people. When Sylvi came to Dag, she arranged for him to have a magazine subscription, and then she moved on to witness in other territories. On his own, Dag started to preach, lending the little literature he had to other interested individuals. On the island of Andøya, Sylvi approached a group of burly fishermen in their shack. She gave a bold witness, played phonograph talks, and offered magazine subscriptions. One young fisherman, Fritz Madsen, was interested and subscribed to our magazines. When she had covered the territory, Sylvi traveled on. Such was the pattern time and again. Pioneers preached, found interested people, placed literature and obtained subscriptions, and then traveled on to new territories. What could be done to follow up on all this interest? Shepherding God's Sheep. January 1939 saw the start of a new arrangement for traveling overseers. Norway was divided into four zones or circuits. The circuit overseers, then called zone servants, were to spend more time at each place than they had before. They put much more emphasis on assisting the congregations, organizing new congregations, and helping interested people take up the ministry. Andreas Kvinge was appointed to serve as circuit overseer in Circuit 4, which extended 1,600 miles, all the way from Fure to Kirkenes. In that vast stretch of land, there were just three congregations: Trondheim, Namsos, and Narvik. But there were also isolated publishers and groups and a list of magazine subscribers to visit. Andreas traveled northward with his wife, Sigrid, mainly by bicycle. He tried to help publishers and interested ones to progress in the truth. Pioneers such as Sylvi Luvas gave Andreas additional information about interested ones who needed spiritual assistance. For example, she told him about Dag Jensen at Hennes and Fritz Madsen on the island of Andøya. In 1940, when Andreas met Dag for the first time, he was shaving, and his face was full of soap, recalls Andreas. I will never forget those beaming eyes surrounded by lather. He forgot completely about shaving. Andreas helped Dag to make spiritual progress. Dag was enthusiastic, and soon he helped his wife Anna and many of his friends and relatives to learn the truth. In the village of Bleik on Andøya, Andreas sought out the young fisherman Fritz Madsen. With Andreas' help, Fritz and his wife became the foundation of the congregation that was later formed there. In many other places, Andreas and his wife visited those who had initially been contacted by Sylvi and other hard-working pioneers. Andreas and the other circuit overseers arranged meetings and formed congregations. As was true of the first-century Christian congregation, some in Norway were planting, and others were watering. But in a mighty way, God kept making it grow. 1 Corinthians 3:6. World War II rocks Norway. In April 1940, Norway was dragged into the Second World War when German troops invaded the country. After just 62 days of combat, the entire country was under the control of Nazi Germany. By then, several towns had been subjected to intense bombardment. Some days after the invasion began, the Gestapo arrested the branch overseer, Enoch Ehrman, and imprisoned him for a week. After a short interrogation, the officers released him. Some weeks later, the Gestapo again took Brother Ehrman in for interrogation. The brothers feared that the Nazis would send them to concentration camps, as had been done in Germany. But the Nazis took no such action, and the publishers continued preaching with determination and zeal. Actually, people seemed to be more receptive to the good news because of the war, and many home Bible studies, then called model studies, were started. The brothers still received the Danish Watchtower from Denmark, while Consolation, or Nyverden, continued to be published in Norwegian. The brothers still held meetings and assemblies, and amazingly the number of publishers increased.